This is VOA News. I'm Tommy McNeil. The UN World Health Organization says it's reached an agreement with Israel for limited pauses in fighting Gaza to allow for polio vaccination for hundreds of thousands of children, with the campaign starting Sunday. This comes as the United Nations campaign to vaccinate hundreds of thousands of children there say that it has come too late for some. Reuters' Rachel Zuda.
Baby Abdul Rahman, days away from his first birthday and should be learning to walk. But at just 9 months of age, he became Gaza's first recorded polio case in 25 years. His mother, Naveen Abu Al-Jidyan, says he was born just weeks before the war began. And because they had been displaced from one place to another, he did not have all his routine infant vaccinations. Since 1988, cases of polio have declined by 99% worldwide, thanks to mass vaccination campaigns and efforts to continue to eradicate it completely.
AP Washington correspondent Saga Morgana reports that your European Union's top diplomat is ramping up pressure on Ukraine's Western backers to lift restrictions on using weapons they provide.
The U.S. restricts the use of long-range ballistic missiles against Ukraine, and some European nations also limit weaponry use. Kyiv is desperate to use the weapons to strike targets inside Russia, which are used to stage attacks on Ukraine. EU Foreign Policy Chief Josep Borrell says the restrictions must be lifted.
Otherwise, it's definitely useless.
Speaking alongside him in Brussels, Ukrainian Foreign Minister Dmytro Kuleba says if certain decisions are made, Ukraine can succeed. If they are not, it won't. And that's on Kyiv's backers. Sagar Magani, Washington.
For more VOAnews.com, this is VOA News. Ukraine's military says that one of the handful of F-16 warplanes that Ukraine has received from its Western partners to help fight Russia's invasion has crashed. Military said in a statement posted on Facebook when the fighter jet went down on Monday when Russia launched a major missile and drone barrage at Ukraine. Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky said that some of those Russian missiles and drones were shot down by F-16s before they reached their targets. Crash was the first reported loss of an F-16 in Ukraine, and where they arrived at the end of last month, and at least six of the warplanes are believed to have been delivered. AP correspondent Haya Panjwani reports on Iran's increasing its stockpile of weapons.
The United Nations nuclear watchdog says that Iran has further increased its stockpile of uranium enriched to near weapons-grade levels in defiance of international demands. That's according to a confidential report by the International Atomic Energy Agency that was seen by the Associated Press. The report says Tehran has also not reconsidered its September 2023 decision to ban the most experienced nuclear inspectors from monitoring its nuclear program, and that IAEA surveillance cameras remain disrupted. The report further says that Iran has still not provided answers to the nuclear watchdog's years-long investigation about the origin and current location of man-made uranium particles. I'm Haya Panjwani.
Venezuelan opposition leader Edmundo Gonzalez will speak remotely with the foreign ministers of the 27 European Union member states on Thursday. In Brussels, the EU policy chief, Josep Borrell, said
he will address the ministers, but at the same time, the repression continues in Venezuela. People from the teams of the opposition have been arrested and disappearing. We are very much worried by the situation of the leaders of the opposition, so the call from Edmundo will be very important for the ministers to take stock of the situation in Venezuela.
Venezuela's Electoral Council and its top court proclaimed Maduro in power since 2013 as the winner of the July 28th election, but has not published complete voting tallies. Venezuela's opposition has published its own tallies on an opposition website showing a resounding victory for Gonzalez, giving him 67% support. Prosecutors in Mexico suggested Thursday that U.S. authorities made a deal with the Mexican drug lord who turned himself in and another capo to get his brother transferred from a U.S. prison. Mexico's attorney general's office also accused U.S. authorities of not responding to information requests in that case. The office also said that the small plane that flew them both to the United States in July had multiple registries and identification numbers. The U.S. has denied it. I'm Tommy McNeil, VOA News.
Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America, James Barkley, Washington. Today is Friday, August 30th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Egypt delivers military equipment to Somalia amid rising tensions in the Horn of Africa.
What we are seeing is sort of the triangular relations between Ethiopia, Somalia, and Egypt, among others, is really part of an old school of thought which considers that only force and destruction could be winners in this continent.
Cameroon media denounced a surge in attacks as the 2025 presidential election approached. Starlink satellite internet service arrival in Botswana is hailed as a game changer amid concern over cost. A Liberian prosecutor reacts to the nullification of a former Supreme Court Chief Justice life sentence.
A single incident of an acquittal is not a yardstick to condescend or elevate the standing of the prosecutor of this country.
And the UN said millions of people of African descent face racial discrimination. Those stories plus Thompson O'Malley Sports are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Egypt delivered military equipment to Somalia this week amid rising tensions in the Horn of Africa following a controversial deal struck between neighboring Ethiopia and the breakaway region of Somaliland earlier this year. Reuters, citing diplomatic and Somali government sources, says that the two Egyptian military planes carrying weapons and ammunition landed at Aden International Airport in Mogadishu on Tuesday morning. Abdi Ismail Samata is a professor at the University of Minnesota and a senator in the Somali parliament. He tells viewers Douglas Mpuga that if these tensions are not resolved, then war is likely.
Douglas, I think African leaders across the board, with very, very few exceptions, have failed to learn the misery they have created for the African people for the last 60, 70 years. And so they seem to be walking on the same path of destruction, whether it's the Ethiopian claim of Somali territory in the north of the country and access to the sea, whether the Egyptians and the Ethiopians who are fighting over the Nile waters, without necessarily imagining a way there could be a positive sum gain for both countries. And the list goes on and on and on. So what we are seeing, sort of the triangular relations between Ethiopia, Somalia, and Egypt, among others, is really part of an old school of thought which considers that only force and destruction could be winners in this continent. And that's a travesty for the people of Africa.
Given the tensions that have been rising in the region, the international community seems to have paid not much attention. Do you find that odd?
No, I don't think it's odd, because Africa is always a footnote to the concerns of big powers when they are sort of grazing on better pasture, so to speak. And so my sense is that we have been liberated from the colony. We have had leadership over the last 70 years or so in most countries. And the question becomes, are we waiting for others to solve our problems? It seems to me the African political class, in this case Ethiopia, Somalia, and Egypt, have miserably failed to figure out a way for a positive sum gain without alienating each other and therefore looking for partners and bosses from elsewhere. That's what's happening. And so the Egyptians are implicated in this. The Ethiopians are the ones who started this problem under the Somali regime, who has tribalized its people such that there is no common citizenship for that country, much like in many parts of Africa. That is where the crisis is. Africa's solutions for African problems have failed. We have to reinvent ourselves.
And briefly, how do you see it being resolved?
Well, it's relatively very simple. If you look at the relationship, for instance, either Uganda with Kenya. Kenya has access to the sea, but Uganda doesn't claim Kenyan territory. Ethiopia can have access to the sea. It already has in Djibouti commercial conditions. But if Ethiopia's prime minister and the regime want to engage in self-aggrandizement, then the tragedy is that war will be the consequences and everybody will be the loser.
Abdi Ismail Samata is a professor at the University of Minnesota and a senator in the Somali parliament. He spoke from Minneapolis, Minnesota, with Douglas Mpuga. One of the prosecutors in the case involving former Chief Justice of Liberia, Gloria Mususkat, has been reacting to the Supreme Court's nullification of a life sentence for the death of her foster daughter. The court overturned the sentence on Wednesday because of what it called insufficient evidence to link Justice Scott and her relatives to the crime. Justice Musu Scott told VOA that she will use her experience in jail to fight for prison and judicial reforms, including a code of conduct for police and prosecutors. Counselor Bobby Livingstone was one of the prosecutors in Justice Musu Scott's trial. He tells me that the Supreme Court's reversal of the sentence means that circumstantial evidence can no longer be used in Liberian law.
I have said before, immediately after the ruling was rendered, that the essence of a criminal prosecution is not to persecute, but to ensure that justice is served. Now, with respect to the current case that was disposed of yesterday by the Supreme Court, the prosecution went on circumstantial evidence. Now, there's a difference between a circumstantial evidence and scientific evidence. Circumstantial evidence is presumptive evidence of deductive evidence. Standard of proof is that by all circumstances that prevail in the facts of that case, it will point to a reasonable man's mind that this person is the doer of the crime. Now, in 2024, the Supreme Court has come and has argued that the circumstantial evidence will now be juxtaposed with scientific evidence. So definitely then, we have an issue now that a new precedent now has been set, that circumstantial evidence may no longer be a reliable evidentiary material to take to court to prove a prosecution's case.
I spoke with the former Chief Justice. She said to me that the government or the prosecution had scientific evidence about the killing but refused to pursue it. She also said that she feels there's a need for police prosecutors reform in Liberia.
Well, I don't want to respond to the acquitted former Chief Justice statement in this particular interview. I want to not delve into that because we know we did a piece of job, that we are convinced that we did this piece of job. If you go back to the file of our case and begin to read her own testimony and begin to read the testimony of some of her relatives, you will find it disturbing. And so she has an acquittal, and I believe she should proceed with her normal life and should not indulge in discrediting, because we have gone to court in many instances in this country. We have gotten convictions for murder. So a single incident of her acquittal is not a yardstick to condescend or elevate the standing of the prosecutor of this country. So I'm just saying that's our opinion, and I'd like to leave it as such and just say that a new standard has been introduced, because that is what called stare decisis. The Supreme Court now has set a new standard and is now making the case that circumstantial evidence may no longer be a tool that we can employ in our jurisprudence, given what has transpired in this case. Although this very Supreme Court ruled in countless opinions on circumstantial evidence, even upholding the ruling of supporting the court.
Counselor Bobby Livingstone was one of the prosecutors in the form of Liberian Supreme Court Justice Musu Scott's trial. He was speaking with me from the Liberian capital, Monrovia. Journalists in Cameroon say attacks on reporters have surged as the country prepares for next year's elections. 91-year-old President Paul Biya, who has ruled for over four decades, may run again. Rights groups say six journalists have been assaulted by gunmen in the past 3 weeks, while several reporters and a radio station have been ordered to stop broadcasting. Muki Edwin Kinzeka reports from Yaoundé.
The Network of Cameroon Media Owners, or APAC, says four of its members have been brutally attacked by men armed with rifles and machetes in Cameroon's capital, Yaoundé, in the last 3 weeks. Emmanuel Ekouli, publisher of the weekly newspaper La Voix du Centre and Cameroon correspondent of Reporters Without Borders, was attacked by armed men in front of his home last week, according to RePAC. Ekouli told VOA he was stabbed several times and that his telephone, recording equipment and laptop were taken. REPAC said that last week, armed men also tried to abduct its president, François Mboke, the publisher of the newspaper Diapason, but his neighbors raised an alarm and the armed men escaped. Xavier Messi, publisher of Le Calam newspaper, and Arsène Konda, publisher of the Identities newspaper, were also attacked by men with machetes this month. Besides the physical attacks on journalists, Cameroon media professionals say they are increasingly being silenced as Cameroon prepares for next year's presidential elections. 91-year-old President Paul Biya, who has ruled for over four decades, has not said whether he will run in the October polls, but his supporters have called for Biya to be a candidate. Council President Joseph Chebonken Kalabubse denies allegations the government is using the council to silence journalists. However, he says some journalists need a refresher course on ethics.
In the days ahead, we will deploy council members to organize workshops and seminars to be able to sensitize and educate our peers on what is at stake and the expectations from them.
Chebon Keng spoke on Cameroon State Radio CRTV. Cameroon's Union of Journalists reports that two presenters of political programs on TV were also attacked by unknown men this month. Human Rights Watch said in July that it is becoming increasingly difficult to speak freely in Cameroon, adding that as elections approach, authorities should fully respect Cameroonians' freedom of expression. Moki Edwin Kinzeka, VOA News, Yaoundé, Cameroon.
You are listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Martin, Washington. Today is Friday, August 30th. For more Africa news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms. We are on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. And still to come on our program, Samson O'Malley Sports. The entry of Elon Musk's Starlink internet service into Botswana market this week has been hailed as a game changer. Analysts agree that the introduction of the satellite provider will improve internet access, but there is concern over subscription costs and its potential to push local internet service providers out of business. From Haburuni, Mkudise Dube reports.
Starlink this week indicated it had begun operations in Botswana 3 months after the company received approval from the Botswana Communications Regulatory Authority, known as BOCRA. The SpaceX-operated broadband service enters a market dominated by Botswana's major mobile network operators. Davonga Mutshutshuti, president of the industry group FinTech Association Botswana, says the introduction of Starlink will make the internet more widely accessible.
It's a very, very big step for our market. Especially when it comes to improving for digital access across the country, as well as it coming in to help us with bridging that digital divide that we've seen over the years.
Iwezi Kama is the country manager for Zamlin, a foreign direct investment consulting firm. He says Starlink's launch heralds a new era in the local internet market. He says local internet service providers, or ISPs, have to change strategy to remain competitive.
They have to figure out another way of battling this coming reality. And ISPs, I think, for the time being in Botswana, do have that advantage on the cost element, because setting up an infrastructure like Starlink is incredibly cash heavy, but it is up, it is running, and needs to recoup those costs.
Starlink is rapidly expanding across Africa. Zimbabwe-based digital expert Sean Drovu says this is a positive shakeup.
The advent of Starlink on the continent in Africa is a big game changer. One, it gives access to the underserved populations, whether in the rural areas and even in high density areas. It's going to bring about innovation. The more access our people have to internet, they can learn.
He also says Starlink's satellite service will lead to better, more reliable internet connections. Concerns, however, remain over Starlink's pricing structure, with fears it could be expensive for rural dwellers and low-income earners. For domestic use, Starlink users in Botswana pay $363 for the hardware and a monthly subscription fee of $52. Muchuchuti says the impact of Starlink in Botswana will depend on the balance between innovation and inclusiveness.
This would mean that, you know, the kinds of people we might be targeting for in these rural areas and low-income areas, that pricing might be out of reach for them because they've got to invest in that initial, you know, implementation, initial purchase of that. And I think, you know, to be truly transformative, there would need to really be efforts to make that technology more and more affordable.
Starlink faced initial licensing challenges, but Botswana's regulatory body granted permission after President Mokgweetsi Masisi met the company's directors in the United States in May. Mkondisi Dube, VOA News, Gaborone, Botswana.
Millions of people of African descent around the world continue to be victims of systemic and structural racism and racial discrimination, according to the United Nations. As the world marks the International Day for People of African Descent tomorrow, Saturday, the UN says it's time for all countries to take decisive action against racism and racial discrimination. Maureen Ojiambo reports.
The United Nations says the rise in systemic and structural racism and racial discrimination is in breach of the prohibition against racial discrimination. In the International Convention on the Elimination of All Forms of Racial Discrimination, the Durban Declaration and Program of Action and other international instruments, the UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres says the activism among the African diaspora has played a crucial role in overcoming injustices and bringing them to the world's attention. The UN High Commissioner for Human Rights, Volker Turk, commented on Saturday's International Day on the struggle for equality.
Today we celebrate these contributions of people of African descent around the globe, and we recognize the extraordinary efforts of so many who are dedicated to building a better future for their communities, anchored in full respect for their human rights. My office and I as High Commissioner are committed to supporting people of African descent and everyone who stands up against racism.
Tuk says racial equality must be integrated as a core principle of the global sustainable framework, including the UN's 23rd agenda, as well as climate and biodiversity policies, and that voices and perspectives of people of African descent be included in all discussions. According to the United Nations Population Fund, women and girls of African descent are subjected to racist attitudes in health sectors across the Americas, making childbirth less safe and increasing the risk of preventable maternal deaths. Jarbas Barbosa is the director of Pan-American Health Organization, PAHO.
People of African descent account for approximately 20% of the total population of the region of the Americas. However, their health and other needs are often underaddressed, resulting in important health inequities. For instance, in our region, people of African descent are 2.5 times more likely to live in conditions of poverty, and they often experience limited access to health services and higher rates of maternal and infant mortality.
Barbosa says policies should be adopted that recognize social participation and improve the health of African populations.
These inequities are rooted in historical exclusion, racism, and discrimination, which contribute to poor health outcomes and perpetuate precarious living conditions for a significant portion of this population. PAHO stands committed to improving health equity and the health and well-being of people of African descent in the Americas.
The UN calls on member states to fight racism and discrimination and build a world of equality, opportunity, and justice for all. For VOA Africa, I am Maureen Ojiambo in San Francisco.
Human Rights Watch on Thursday accused both sides in Sudan's more than 16-month conflict of committing war crimes, including summary execution, torture, and the mutilation of dead bodies. Since April 2023, Sudan's army, led by de facto ruler Abdel Fattah al-Burhan, has been locked in a devastating war with the paramilitary rapid support forces, RSF, that has killed tens of thousands and displaced millions. The New York-based Rice Group says its analysis of social media images indicated mass executions of at least 40 people alongside the torture and ill treatment of 18 detainees, according to the French news agency AFP. It is time now for Daybreak Africa Sports. Here is Samson Omale in Abuja, Nigeria. A very good Friday morning to you, Samson.
Good Friday morning to you too, James. We begin the sport with the CECAFA Women Championship as Commercial Bank of Ethiopia defeated Kenya Police Bullet 1-0 to win the Regional Women Club Championship. CBE will represent the CECAFA zone at the 2024 edition of the CAF Women's Champions League. For the first time in the club's history, the Ethiopian Giants finally achieved their aim of playing in Africa's flagship women's club competition after falling short in 2021 and 2023. The host country for the fourth edition of the CAF Women's Champions League will be announced later this year. Staying with the Continental Football Governing Body, the Confederation of African Football is launching the CAF Video Assistant Academy for the 54 CAF Member Association, a move that is aimed at elevating the standard of officiating in Africa, following CAF's recent hosting of the most successful CAF Africa Cup of Nations that saw the quality of officiating being singled out. CAF is building onto this success with the innovative academy set to be rolled out between September and October 2024. The CAF VAR Academy will train elite referees across the continent for international competitions and national championships on the use of VAR and ensure that Africa continues to produce elite referees as seen in recent times. And now to rugby. The Springboks, South Africa's national men rugby team, will take on New Zealand on Saturday in Johannesburg with a mixture of experienced and relatively fresh faces in the starting lineup. It is the first clash between the Southern Hemisphere heavyweights since the Rugby World Cup final in France. Loose forward Ben Jason Dixon is one of the relatively inexperienced players in the South African squad in Saturday's starting 15 in a fixture that will see a mixture of experience and relatively fresh faces in the starting lineup.
I think that's a dream as you grow up a Bolt fan. That's the big moments, and you plan your Saturday, and some people plan their week around watching the Bolt test, and then being able to experience it myself. I'm looking forward to it a lot, and I think it is a real deal.
And now to basketball. Nigeria has jumped 4 places in the latest edition of the FIBA World Ranking Women, moving into the top 10 of the rankings and into 8th place. Nigeria, represented by the Tigres, the senior national women basketball team, had entered the history books few weeks ago at the Paris Olympic Games. The Tigres had secured 2 wins from 3 games for the first time to become the first African side, either male or female, to compete in the quarterfinals of the Olympics. They have now made history again as the first African national team in the history of the FIBA World Ranking, men or women, to be ranked in the top 10. And that's it for this Friday's edition of Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson Omale in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson. Have a very nice weekend. And that's it for this Friday, August 30th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for spending your week with us. For more Africa news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms, including Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. We are also on YouTube, where you can watch our TV shows, Africa 54, Straight South Africa, and Red Carpet. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, I'm James Botti in Washington, wishing that you will have a great weekend. We'll see you again on Monday morning.
Technology. technology advances and artificial intelligence continue to make breakthrough advances that benefit humanity, there are also growing concerns that it mirrors societal patriarchal structures. On this week's edition of Our Voices, we will discuss the state of women in AI today, whether AI-powered services lack diverse gender perspectives. Join the conversation on Wednesdays at 1900 UTC on